If you have chronic pain or some kind of immune condition, there's a lot of things people struggle with that Chinese medicine can help with, right?
Oh, absolutely. Chinese medicine for thousands of years has been the mode of choice treating the majority of people on Earth and carrying them through pandemics and all sorts of illnesses and diseases.
So we're going to talk about the history of Chinese medicine on today's episode of Be Well Now.
If you don't have your health, what do you have?
You are a functional medicine doctor.
Join us as we blend modern and ancient wisdoms to be well now.
Welcome to the Be Well Now podcast. I'm Nick, the curious patient.
And I'm Dr. Ron Dumar, chiropractic physician, Chinese medicine doctor, and physical medicine doctor.
Soccer coach, father.
Ski coach.
Friend.
Chiropractor.
Human being, homo sapien. Listen, Chinese medicine.
I do actually fill all of those. Yeah. That's nice. Thank you, Nick.
You have a pharmacy of Chinese herbs in the back, right? Chinese medicine is something that you do. You heal people with this, and yet nobody understands what it is. I mean, they come to you, and obviously they're here for a reason. But broadly speaking, because we're a niche,
you know
that people don't quite understand. What is Chinese medicine? And so this is actually our second episode in Be Well Now, where we're doing a deeper dive into the history to try to help people understand what it is that you so believe in.
Yeah, I think it's really important to understand, to begin to wrap your brain and maybe even get a grasp of Chinese medicine, the legitimacy of it, and also how it can benefit us in our lives. And that's what we're doing these podcasts for, so that people can be able to connect with that and say, oh, that actually makes sense to me. And so
how can it benefit people in their lives? I'm always going for the low-hanging fruit, but real quick before we get into the details, give me something applicable that Chinese medicine could help me with.
Well, one of the things that's super interesting is if you look up, you can, in 2015, there was a gentleman, a professor in Asia who received a Nobel Prize. And he received a Nobel Prize because he actually was able to isolate an extract from a Chinese medicine herb. And the plant itself, the Artemisia is what it's called, it's been used to treat parasitic infections and diseases and actually malaria for many, many years, thousands of years. And he extracted a nutrient from it, or compound, that led to a complete reducing and reduction in malaria infections in Africa.
So something
so he
that's
received
been around
a Nobel Prize for this discovery.
But there was 1,000 years of this being used in Chinese medicine
for this purpose.
And so there was a truth to its efficacy.
Yes.
For millennia.
Yes. And so you look at infections, viral infections, parasitic infections, even fevers, just generally fevers where the body heats the blood. Your immune system has a lot of inflammation floating through the body and it's trying to clear something out. Chinese medicine has herbals that will benefit you in those conditions.
So take me back, 3,000 years? I mean, there was some rudimentary understanding. I call it rudimentary. What do I know? It's so easy to think in the past that people weren't people, right?
Yeah.
That they weren't smart, and it's it's all black and white and grainy footage.
We love to caveman the idea, right? It's they were carrying around great big bats and grunting to each other in some way to try to express what they wanted, right? But these were very sophisticated societies. And they were very sophisticated people. And there were lots of very intelligent physicians and practitioners trying to teach others and trying to canonize to some degree or create an organization to this medicine that could be handed forward. And in Chinese medicine, or I should say in Asia in general, if you know Asian culture at all, heritage is such an incredible piece of what they do. They really almost worship their forefathers. Okay. And so the blessings that you've been given by your past and by your history contribute to how well you do in the future. And so this recognition of the past is important. So when we go back and we look at, thousands of years ago, we do know that certain people were literally riding on tortoise shells to try to describe what they had done to improve somebody's health. what plants they had used, what method they had used in their treatment. And sometimes they've actually found that in on bone as well, the writings on bone. So yeah, it's very ancient recorded history, and it's literally 3,000-4,000 years, 2,000-3,000 year history.
We were talking about this before the podcast. Some understanding that like the air we breathe is important, and then this red stuff that comes out when we get a cut.
Yeah, the original understanding, they would describe it as they knew that the body required the intake of air, And so they called this the chi almost, right? The energy that was given to the body they believed was taken in or breathed in. And then also this substance that would leak out of them if there was an abrasion or an injury. They found that was quite important as well, of course. And if you lose too much of that, well, you're done. And so they wanted to preserve that liquid substance and to support that energetic intake. And that was really the basis of saying, okay, what in life and what in the world around us can contribute to benefiting these substances? And, you know, Anglo traditions are not necessarily all that far off. There's earth, wind, fire, and a variety of historical medical traditions where they look at the world around them and they were trying to create some sort of semblance of how to orient treatment for their own body. Well, Chinese medicine, the question is, well, how did Chinese medicine and how did acupuncture become so prominent and remain so consistent?
Right, because I'm wondering what of that original, some of those original findings has stood the test of time.
Yeah, well, here's an interesting one.
Today.
A really, really ancient physician, his name is Huato, doesn't need to matter to you at all, but essentially he was known for being able to determine diagnosis and establishing a diagnostic criteria. This is thousands of years ago. Mm. Establishing a diagnostic criteria, this is really important. But one of his major indicators of diagnosis was feeling the pulse. So he would check the pulse, and he established that at different regions of the pulse would give you a read on different areas of the body. He also believed, as this developed on, they determined that, well, if the pulse is really bounding and high and superficial, it means one thing. But if it's more moderate and low and internal, it means another. And if it's more prominent at different regions, it can give you an indication about certain organ systems. So with all of that, you can look at it and say, okay, well, is this an external invasion of an external environmental factor causing this problem? Or is it actually a deficiency from within causing the problem? Is this a result of an internal deficiency and then from internal or external? And then you can say, well, is it slow or is it fast? Well, if something's fast, we would usually relate that to heat or warmth. And if something's slow, we would typically relate that to cool or cold. So then looking at things as internal or external, hot or cold, okay, excess deficiency. So is it in excess? Is it overabundant? Is it abounding? Or is it a deficiency? Is it the lack of something that is the problem? A super interesting idea that comes up here in Chinese medicine philosophy is that you could, let's say that this line right here represents balance. And I have both my levels up to this line. Okay, if both of my bars reach that line, that means I'm in balance. If I have one bar that goes lower, that means I'm out of balance. So there's a deficiency. Okay, now if I have a bar that goes higher, that bar would be called an excess. But now let's say I have a bar here and it's level and this bar is right at the line and the other bar is lower. Well, the bar that's lower is the deficiency. Well, what about the bar that is right up to the line? The question is, does that look like an excess or a deficiency, right? And so sometimes you have to differentiate as a Chinese practitioner between those. And I know that can seem kind of confusing, but I'm expressing this idea just to help you understand the level of thought and contemplation and the sophistication of thought that went into the discoveries that led to them being able to heal from conditions and to actually treat diseases and ailments thousands of years ago.
Well, I think sometimes you say, let's say one, you know, marker like testosterone is low. And you're saying what's happening up or downstream that could be causing that? Let's not just boost the T with the hormone always.
Correct.
You know, you're looking at the whole system. What's happening up or downstream that could be causing this? So it's not just boosting one level to fix the thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Philosophically, are you talking about Chinese medicine sort of informing the way that you look at the whole body system?
It's a whole, yeah. This idea of holistic care or holism. And that is it. It's applying the treatment or the therapeutic to the whole of the patient, right? And so because of that, it's not just a, oh, this for that, or this is low, and so we're going to give you some of this. But it's a matter of saying, how does this apply and affect the entire system? There's a study, a field of study now called systems biology, which really Chinese medicine is a systems biology system.
So it all feels very integrated in that way.
Yeah, it's now about the system. It's not about just the component part. It's not just about the pond itself, but it's about the river that feeds it.
And you feel like Chinese medicine understood that well and had that in its sort of...
In its infancy,
yeah.
There was a recognition of the understanding that all these things interrelated.
Okay.
Yes.
Which is brilliant.
Yes. Well, it's like taking it back to the elements and understanding the elements. They're looking around them as like, you know, fire actually consumes wood, right? But then fire generates ash, and ash falls to the ground and makes earth. And out of the compression of the earth, create metals, right? And then from this, if you've ever been in a cave and you've seen stalactites and stalagmites, stalactites actually come from a dripping of fluid or water that leaves mineral deposits on the roof of the cave. And so it's a dripping of this water that is generated. And then water obviously generates also wood. So it produces wood, then wood gets consumed. And so there is this process or this cycle in nature. And so the idea is looking at nature and then saying, okay, well, how does that impact our body? And is our body of the earth? Well, we know that we go back to the ground and we know that we could decompose and we're taken up by the earth. So, of course, it's a perfect metaphor for suggesting we should treat the body the same way that the earth appears to be treated around us. And so it is a conglomerate of systems, right? It's an interconsuming of systems and it's a harmonizing of systems. And so that's what Chinese medicine aims to do.
So is Chinese medicine backwards, superstitious, irrational? Because a lot of people want things that they can point to and say, I think this works because I believe it and it's proven, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's plenty of proven, you know, evidence that Chinese medicine works, but people might look at it as like, I don't think that actually does work.
There was a phenomenon happening historically throughout the world. There were Native American healers, there were homeopaths, there were bone setters, even early chiropractors, you could say. But there was a phenomena occurring in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And what it was is this, it's called the German medical education system. And the German medical education system was making way throughout the world. And it was this establishment of testing and experimentation and data requisition and data collection and making a lot of these determining decisions and choices based on data, based on that science, as people often would refer to it as. So this was happening around the late 1800s to early 1900s. And as a result, many countries began to have within them almost a revolt against their current traditional mode of medical care. Okay. So they began to look away from traditional herbalism. They began to look away from homeopaths. They began to look away from all of these natural things that had carried them up to that point. And of course, they had to have been, at least in some way, either propagandized to, or they were also ready to be propagandized to, because they felt there was a need for something more, that they could do better. And I don't disagree with that. We should be progressing, and we should be able to have progress and improve and expect ourselves to improve and get better as we go through life. Well, what happened was for most of the areas, for most of the countries that were essentially, territories of Great Britain, for a majority of these countries, traditional medicine took a significant backseat, and they began to, through the government, run a campaign essentially to eliminate and get rid of and sidestep the traditional care. And they wanted to implement this new mode of care, this new type of doctor, this new professional that was armed with science, with data, with research, and with all of this testing and experimentation. And so it was this idea that the doctor became a scientist, no longer so concerned with interacting with his environment, no longer so concerned with interacting with his patient, not assessing the tongue or the pulse. And there became this disconnect between the patient and the physician through the implementation of German medical education system. Now, Asia was also confronted with the German medical education system. And they were determining what to do. And there was a significant amount of people that said, yeah, we should get rid of the traditional care. We should get rid of our old traditional Chinese healers. And we should require all of them to step up and to become this new professional German medical trained healer. But then there was another cohort within Asia that said, this is part of our history. This is part of our forefathers. This is given to us. This is meaningful. This is who I am, is them. And I cannot divorce myself. I cannot and I will not divorce myself from the medicine that perpetuated life so much so that I can actually be here today. And so there was a group together essentially that said, no, we have to fight to preserve our history, to preserve our culture. And around Mao is Mao's China at the time. There was in 1919 actually a May 4th event where they held a great big uprising. It was this great big event to try to convince and to motivate people to eliminate and dump traditional modes of care. And what ended up coming out of that was a bill put before the Asian court in 1929 to eliminate it completely. So Chinese medicine was on the brink of being eliminated, the traditional care and mode of care in Asia, in 1929. And then some of the government entities, and they spoke with Mao, and Mao had an idea, and they came up with this idea of bridging the two, of bringing up the best they could of the traditional medicine and bringing in also the experimental German medical medicine. And so they began this process of merging them together, of integrating East and West. And there were even discussions as early as 1930 about this concept of bringing together the best of the West and the best of the East. And if you look around or even do a quick Google search, what do you see today? What do you see today? You see clinics that are named East-West. You see clinics.
Your integrated health is what you talk about, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's all about integration. And
you there's wisdom people. In different traditions.
Yes.
To really utilize.
Exactly. And the idea is we want to be able to utilize whatever's best for the patient. And we don't want to just throw the baby out with the bathwater. Just because we have this new thing or the new kid on the block, it doesn't mean we need to divorce everything that was. what we need to do is reassess and say, what are the benefits of this new thing? Because there certainly were benefits of the new thing. And then how can this old thing actually make this new thing better? And I feel like that's where we are right now in our world, in our life right now. If you look around us in our medical care, we're reaching for Reiki, for energy medicine. We're reaching for yoga, for all of these traditional Asian practices. They're taking hold within the United States in a variety of different forms. And so we're recognizing the value of implementing them.
Because people, I mean, broadly speaking, outside of our little health niche, Americans are getting less healthy, right? Like the trend is going in the wrong direction.
Sadly, sadly, more drugs and more surgery, which has been our medical care system for the last 150 years, has not been the answer to better health.
I think everybody knows it. We can have arguments about this, but the healthcare system being broken, us being less healthy, like we feel it. And there are some answers in, I think, the tradition of Chinese medicine that, you know, you believe in. And I wonder if you want to talk about what seems to work for patients. I mean, acupuncture is a big part of your clinic.
Absolutely.
A lot of people out there have never tried it.
Yeah. And there's a number of different therapies, and we obviously use as much integration. So my philosophy with that same implementation as began in the 1900s, I have that same idea, the same philosophy of, well, what's going to work best for the patient. And so whether it's ozone, you know, injections, injecting nutrients or injecting ozone itself, if it's acupuncture, needles, where we're stimulating them, there's a variety of different colleges and even medical schools now that are doing courses for their doctors and physicians in acupuncture and acupuncture therapies. And if you've been to a physical therapist recently, chances are you've received some acupuncture technique called dry needling. So acupuncture and Eastern medicine is finding itself in a significantly legitimate foothold in the United States. And practitioners, medical doctors, physicians, physical therapists are all jumping on board, wanting to be able to implement it in their practices to benefit their patients. So it's happening in a big way. We're seeing significant benefits. So with patients that have anxiety, depression, even earaches, otitis media, otitis externa, coughs, colds, the flu. There's a whole host of things that we use acupuncture and Chinese medicine to enhance the vibrancy and the optimal state of the body. So it improves the immune response. It improves digestion. We're treating digestive disorders. We're treating colitis. We're treating irritable bowel.
Because you have a litany of supplements in the front from another company, but then you provide your own herbs. So what's the difference between, you know, high quality supplements that maybe a lot of practitioners use versus the stuff that you're doing? That's the Chinese medicine philosophy that your herbs are from, right?
Yes. So the Chinese medicine is, again, I like that you said that. It is a philosophy. It is this idea. It's a mode of instruction. It's an algorithm of what are the symptoms that you've received and how can you introduce that to the patient in a way that is going to be best for their physiology. And so in the back, we have a pharmacy where we can do custom formulas for patients based on their individual unique physiology. And up front, it's in the United States, we love to produce supplements. I can't say that that's overly unique, but there are products and supplements galore, and people can get completely overwhelmed by the number of supplements that are for the heart or for the liver or for the kidney, and you got to buy this one, you got to buy that one. So the nutrients and supplements that I keep up front are specific ones that I think are targeted to certain organs specific organs themselves, and I will use those to enhance some of what we're doing with the Chinese medicine, Chinese herbs.
We kind of bounced around a lot from history to how you're using it now.
Well, yeah, and the idea is the future, looking at the future. So going from history into the future of Chinese medicine, what does it look like moving forward? And I would say it looks like the demands of the patient. It looks like what is necessary or needed by the patient's physiology. And Chinese medicine, acupuncture specifically, with its ability to trigger neurology and to trigger the brain and to help reduce anxiety, reduce incidence of depression, to help patients get off of medication. We have a whole mode of care within Chinese medicine called auricular acupuncture. And this auricular acupuncture was implemented in the later 1900s as well within the military as a form of reducing their dependence or need on medication. So it's been found that even inserting these their specific acupuncture needles into the ear, they're semi-permanent, but by implementing them, the use of that, it reduces the need for narcotics by 50%. Now imagine you have a highly skilled, trained soldier or an employee of some sort, and you want them to be able to function to the top of their game. Do you want them on narcotics, or do you want them to be on as little as possible? And so acupuncture will heighten your awareness. It will improve your memory, improve your focus. It will help your immune system, your immune response. It's going to improve your physiology and your health overall so that your body performs optimally. And Chinese medicine supports that treatment and therapy as well.
I think most people want to be on less narcotics.
Yeah, and less medications in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would your herbs count as medications?
So it depends on which, it depends on who you're talking to and who's classifying them.
Yeah.
So from the, you know, U.S. Department of Supplements of Food and Agriculture, they might say, they might refer to all of these type of things as drugs, right? And if they register them, they usually will register it as a drug. Because you can't really register a naturally occurring substance. So the herbs that I use are plants. They're extracts from plants, and they're not really they're the plants in their whole form as well. And so it's taking the leaf or taking the root or taking the stem, a specific part of that, and then processing it as in by cooking it, steaming it so that it denatures, and then you take that liquid. And then you're able to turn that into a granule, right, or a powder of some sort. So we get that into a powder form. But essentially, it is the plant extract. Just like if you were at home and put a plant in on your stove, and in water and just steeped it for a while, then we're doing a similar type of thing, except there's a number of details that go into the processing and the time and a whole bunch of other parameters like that are needed. But the answer to that is you can't really look at a naturally occurring plant and call it a drug. But like the supplements that we have up front, sometimes they'll contain more just nutrients. So there'll be a nutrient, or there'll be a nutraceutical, or it'll be a compound. Let's say it's a compound that's taken out of a plant. It's extracted from a plant, and so they isolate that compound, but all the other structure of the plant is discarded. So that can be classified as a drug. Okay? So anyway, I don't know if that was interesting or not to you. But
I'm interested in it.
But the fact of the matter is we use herbal medicine. We use plants. We use the flower. We use the bud. We use the branch. We use the leaf. We use the stem. We use the root of the plant for specific action in the body. It can have an impact. We have patients that want to be treated for gout. They come in and they have significant pain either in their shoulder, more specifically in their toe or their foot, And we have a specific regimen protocol developed for that. And I developed a Chinese herbal product for that, which is a formula of herbs that work together to help the body to clear the uric acid and to improve blood flow and circulation. So it's not isolated to the foot and the toe. So we're able to clear the buildup and production. And if you've ever had gout before, it feels like a bunch of tiny razor blades on your foot or in your joints that it's affecting, which is not fun.
No.
It's very irritating, very problematic.
So it's a centuries old wisdom. We've just scratched the surface talking about the history.
Even though this was our in-depth. This is our in-depth look, but we're only scratching the surface. I mean, so yeah, and that's fine.
Did we leave anything out that you feel you're screaming that you want to include?
No, I think we covered it fairly well. I think we got the tidbits that we needed to. I do think it's maybe a unique thing for people to recognize that that just like we talked about Artemisia at the beginning, and we talked about how they extracted a compound, artemisinin, from that, and that played a significant role in malaria treatment in Africa. Well, there are thousands and thousands of compounds now, today, that have been extracted from Chinese medicine. Okay, so what's happening on a research level is that scientists are studying the way that herbs have been used in Chinese medicine and for what conditions they've been used. And then they're taking those herbs and seeing if they can isolate a compound from them that they think has the most significant impact to the condition. So when I read journal articles, and I like to try to read about one a day at least, when I read them, frequently there will be a caveat in there, and often it's written that, oh, we're doing this research on this plant or this drug because this shows promise for drug development, for pharmaceutical development, okay? So there's always this scientific approach as far as drug approach, I should say, drug development approach in these papers. And largely, that's because that's where a lot of the money is, to be frank, right? That's where a lot of the money in medicine is, right there at the pharmaceutical level. And so they have the money to actually pay for the research, to dive into these plants, to extract nutrients, to try to develop, hopefully, a new drug or a new medication someday that's going to be a benefit to people. So even your drugs, even your pharmaceuticals, on some level, are based or have a root, maybe a root of discovery in Chinese medicine.
That makes a lot of sense.
Oh, yes, it does.
Be well now, everybody.
Be well now. Namaste.
Namaste.